to A Voice of a People with Linda Sims here on WWGH 107.1 FM Radio. We stream live on the web, www.wwgh1071.com. You can also download free app, TuneIn, and search WWGH. And it will remain on your phone as your regular apps on any electronic device, iPhones, cell phones, laptops, or computers. And don't forget to search WWGH. If you would like to call in with questions or make comments today during our 45 minutes on the show from now until top of the hour, 5 p.m., please call 740-383-9944. Again, 740-383-9944. I have a thought for you today. Take time to laugh. It's the music of the soul. Take time to think. It's the source of power. Take time to read. It is the fountain of wisdom. Take time to love and be loved. It is a God-given privilege. Take time to work. It is the price of success. Now, let me share with you those who faithfully support A Voice of a People. Starting with Inspect Ohio, LLC, your one-call home inspection company with 25 years of experience working for you. From LaRue, Ohio, telephone number is 740-262-0939. Logos Christian Ministries, Pastor Jackie Peterson, 582 Lee Street, Marion, Ohio. Telephone number there is 740-223-1515 or www.logoschristianministries.com. They have free produce market every second Saturday of every month. The next produce market will be July. I think the 4th is on a Saturday. It is 4th and 7th to be 11th. So that would be July the 11th, 2020 at 582 Lee Street, which is the Logos Christian Ministries address. Remember, free produce. July the 11th, 2020. We have also Chappie's Hydraulic Hose Specialist, LLC. 1325 North Main Street, Marion, Ohio. Telephone number there is 740-382-8552. Well, happy Monday to all of you who are listening. We are doing politics today. My guest is Tim Combs. He is our political historian. I have named him that because he is really good with history and he's good with politics. Not only that, he was a former history teacher in the Marion City School System here in Marion, Ohio. How are you today, Tim?
Great. Good to be here.
That's great. I'm glad you had time to come.
Yeah.
We have a lot to talk about.
Oh, yes. We could probably do a 2 or 3 hour program today. So we've done a lot since the last time I was here.
Oh, and I have a beef today, Tim.
Okay.
Why are they trying to take away our options of voting?
Well, of course, I'm not on the Board of Elections anymore. I haven't been on that for several years. And again, I'm not totally familiar with what the legislature just passed, some legislation involving this whole process. Of course, a lot of it revolves around the matter of people wanting to be able to vote by mail,
right,
absentee voting, because of the coronavirus issue.
Yes.
We had a situation back in April and up in Wisconsin where there was long lines because a lot of poll workers didn't want to work because of the issue. Just last week, we had a real disaster in Georgia in a primary that they had people, our daughter and her family live in Georgia, and our daughter had to stand in line for about an hour before she could vote. As I understand it, and again, I may be off a little bit on this, they are going to be sending out applications to every registered voter in the state, as they've done for the last several years, in, I think, October or late September or whatever,
okay,
for people to be able to go ahead and vote absentee.
Okay.
They are going to make available, of course, the in-person voting on Election Day itself.
Okay.
But there are many people who are saying that there is a need to be looking at being able to have people to be able to vote by mail almost exclusively. That's what we ended up in the primary. We ended up
doing
it all.
Right, we did in Ohio, yes.
We ended up doing that all by mail. Well, like, for instance, my wife and I went in early before the March primary and already voted it in person at the board office, but that was before they shut down the March 17th election and then rescheduled for April 28th. And then they all did it by at the point by mail.
Right.
And there are those, I mean, yeah, states out west, but for the most part, California, particularly Washington, Oregon, so those states that do everything all by mail anyhow, I've done it for a number of years.
Right.
And, you know, there's the idea that that should be happening everywhere. So people don't want to take their health and their issues in their hands. And
right.
So we'll see how all that plays out in these next few weeks. They've got certainly time to get it done before the November election. But there's, of course, issues about whole idea that about fraud, all that, that's simply ridiculous. I mean, as I say, we've had absentee voting by mail. I mean, people have been voting that by mail for absentee for a number of years now.
Right.
And having it all done by that is, you know, not a whole lot different. So we'll see how all that plays out these next weeks and months ahead.
I truly hope so, because I'm like you. We had to vote like that just past March for our primary April, here in Ohio. And we had no problem.
Yeah.
We didn't hear about votes not coming in, losing a bag over here. It seemed like it was
There was one issue down, I believe, in Butler County where there was some votes that did not get in on time. And the postal office admitted it was their fault. I don't know whatever happened to that issue. But I think there's enough time to get all those kinds of issues resolved.
Yeah.
And worked out before the election, so.
Right, because you know a lot of people think they steal the election every year.
So.
Because their candidate didn't make it, right? Yeah. So what you have for us today, Tim?
Well, as I say, of course, with the coronavirus, that issue, of course, the issues with protests the last few weeks since the George Floyd killing and out west, and what's happened there, and then just, you know, of course, over the weekend in Atlanta.
This
has
that
sparked
was a disaster,
huge protest movement.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, there was some violence, and hopefully that was moved quickly and went to peace protest. There was a lot of criticism of Mr. Trump and that photo op that he did in D.C. in front of the Church of the Holding the Bible, and particularly like the fact that police, whoever, broke up what had been really a peaceful demonstration. And, you know, the First Amendment gives you the right to peacefully protest and redress grievances of the government. General Mark Milley, who was chair of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, has now apologized for his being part of that effort and so forth. He was in his battle fatigues, whatever. And he's admitted that that was not the best thing to do.
Yeah.
And particularly former Defense Secretary James Mattis made a statement after that whole thing in which, and of course, General Mattis is a retired Marine officer and was Secretary of Defense for the first year and a half or so of the Trump administration, which he castigated Mr. Trump, feeling that he was, in fact, had become a threat to the Constitution.
Right.
And a number of military officers made comment and issued statements that when the members of the military take the oath to be sworn into the military, take an oath not to the president, it's to protect and defend the Constitution.
Right.
And that is a very, I think, a significant statement has been made. And there have been some real concerns that Mr. Trump maybe doesn't quite understand the process of happening. We feel he doesn't understand the constitutional process of being able to protest and whatever. Certainly, what we've seen in these last weeks, as we get close to the election, we now know that Joe Biden will be the Democratic nominee for president.
Right.
He's in the process of running through various people to be his running mate for vice president.
Okay.
He has indicated he's going to name a woman.
Right.
And there are several that are being looked at. I think his plan is, I believe, by mid-July to have a person named. Originally, the Democratic Convention was going to be in mid-July in Milwaukee.
Right.
And that's now been moved back to August. And I'm not sure exactly what they were planning, whether they were going to go with online thing or virtual, or still going to go with the whole big convention.
I was wondering about that.
I haven't totally followed all of that.
Right.
And then, of course, the Republican convention was scheduled for Charlotte, North Carolina.
Right.
And the governor of North Carolina indicated because of the coronavirus and so forth and people being together, had indicated they might not be able to do all they wanted to do in terms of convention. So apparently part of the convention is going to be also in Jacksonville, Florida. I'm not quite sure how that's all going to work out, but it'll be interesting. So so those issues are out there. Frankly, at this point, polling and other various things have indicated the feeling is now that Mr. Trump is in a serious difficulty.
Indeed,
the Republican Party is in serious difficulty. And it's on these issues of with the protests and the his handling of the pandemic. And so the result is that, in fact, I just heard something the other day, just maybe yesterday, a day or two ago, that election may well be Mr. Biden's to lose at this point. And that
you think so?
Well, that's what it being about based on polling at the state level, national polling. I mean, an average of 12 point leads, and just that, and then because these issues about concerns over Mr. Trump's handling of various things in this.
So Biden right now seems to be far ahead of
him. Yeah, well, what we're looking at in a variety of various polling and everything, and I know many Republican Party strategists are very concerned that they're not going to do very well, particularly that they could very well be losing their Senate majority in the fall. So
is it true that President Trump gave Mitch McConnell a lifetime position or trying to?
I hadn't heard that one. The only way he could do that is if McConnell would be named to a federal judicial position, which would be a lifetime appointment.
Right, I think.
But he'd have to resign his Senate seat. And of course, he'd run for re-election this year, and she'd be defeated for re-election. But that would be a pretty tight thing because the way this works is, of course, election day is November 3rd. And the Congress convenes on January 3rd, and then the presidential inauguration is noon January 20th. Now, if it's on a Sunday, like for instance, after the 2012 election, when Barack Obama was reelected, the 2013 inauguration actually fell on Sunday. But so what they had to do was he and at that time Joe Biden was the vice president, they took their oath of office at noon on the 20th in a private ceremony to meet the constitutional requirement that their term began at noon. But the public ceremony was the next day on Monday, the 21st. They repeated the oath of office in the public ceremony to do that. So those issues out there, and as I say, some real concerns about there's some people question whether or not Mr. Biden or Mr. Trump is going to try to, quote, steal the election.
They were accused of that last election, right? Now, Hillary.
Here's the thing. Yeah, he could not get over the fact that he actually ended up with 3 million fewer votes than Hillary Clinton did. And there was all kinds of stuff out there and nothing that was just, talk, and there was nothing
people
out there
upset.
With it. And, of course, the Electoral College is the thing that elects the president.
Right.
And
I couldn't think of that word, Electoral College.
And right now, based on both the popular vote and electoral vote, right now, the feeling is that if the election held today, Mr. Biden would win both by huge margins in both entities.
Okay.
So
popular vote also, you're saying?
Well, the popular vote, the popular vote difference last time between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump was 2%. We're now looking at margins of 10, 11, 12, that would clearly be enough to swing the Electoral College also.
Right, right.
Yeah, that would And those issues are out there. We've had, of course, we had our primary at the end of April in the county and the state, and the candidates are all lined up for the fall election. Now, normally the parties would be having their booths or tents at the Marion County Fair, but of course there's not going to be any Marion County Fair this year, so that will not
unfortunately, be happening. It won't be.
Yeah, and there'll be no Marion Popcorn Festival in the September, so there'll be nothing there. Candidates are going to have to adjust how they're going to do their campaigning, door to door. That's going to be questionable whether that's going to fly or not. It's going to be different.
A lot of things are up in the air as of right now.
TV advertising, I suppose. I mean, we do have local TV. But I'll tell you, the protests these last few weeks since the George Floyd killing
how is that affecting politics?
Well, it's turned the world upside down.
Yes.
I mean, when you have protests in places like Marion or Upper Sandusky or whatever, young people, people of various, ethnic groups, racial groups, whatever, have come together, and it's really turned the whole thing on its head.
They're pretty serious.
Well, yeah, I mean, we've maybe not seen this kind of a social movement, if you will, maybe almost, I don't know, maybe if it continues on, it'd be almost back to the days of the Vietnam War era in the late 60s.
I don't remember so much of a protest here in Marion, even though I was a lot younger during those Vietnam protests.
Yeah, but
this is like worldwide almost, isn't it?
Well, it's been nationwide and worldwide. Mm-hmm. And now the issue about pulling down statues of former Confederate leaders.
Yeah,
I know in Virginia, they are taking down the statue of Robert E. Lee, which has been in Richmond, Virginia, which of course the state capital of Virginia and was the Confederate capital. Mm-hmm. They have what they call Monument Avenue, and they've got monuments there of Robert E. Lee, Jefferson Davis, who was the Confederate president, and a lot of those are coming down. And I know that people say, well, it's part of our heritage or part of history. Well, I would just say this, give back to our own American Revolution. Mm-hmm. When the American Revolution happened in 1776, you didn't have as many cities then, but New York, Boston, Philadelphia, there were equestrian statues of George III, King George III. They were pulled down at that point
by
American revolutionaries. When the Soviet Union broke up, when the Eastern European communist regimes broke up, statues of Lenin and other communist leaders came down. And remember, there was on the top of the Hungarian capital in Budapest, they had this huge red star on the parliament building there as a symbol of the communist authority.
Okay.
And they wondered, how do we get it down? And several companies said they'd do it for free and pulled it down.
Pulled that down.
End of World War II. There were, in Germany, swastikas that were all over the place, and people blew them up and whatever and so forth.
So this isn't anything new.
No, this is not anything new. This, when you have that kind of a movement, change it, kind of that, throwing the old order out and so forth. And like I say, a lot of these statues are probably going to end up going to the, to use the old Marxian phrase, the dustbin of history.
Yes.
And so,
I think it's time to move on.
The thing is, a lot of those statues were built or created or whatever in the end of the 19th century, 1890s, when the South was, the Civil War had only been over for a few years, and you had, frankly, white supremacy in control.
Right.
And it was almost like they were honoring these leaders of the lost cause.
Of course, yes.
And so times have changed, and
that's why they want them down.
So so in some cases they've already come down. Others have been. They're going to be
some more coming down,
so forth.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
History moves on, though, right?
Well, that is correct. It does move on, and changes do happen. So.
Take out the old and bring in the new.
Yeah, that is a fact. In fact, what happens. I think the other point here, I was thinking about the fact that this James Mattis, former defense secretary, and the military made it very clear. You know, we have a civilian control of the military. There was a very strong reason why the framers of the Constitution put civilian control of the military. They did not want a military controlled by a military man.
Okay.
And so that's why they made the President of the United States the Commander-in-Chief of the Armed Forces.
Okay.
But it appeared that Mr. Trump wasn't really clear about it. He thought he could use the military in a sense that it was almost a political process, and that's just is not the way it works.
Like he can use them when he wants to and where he wants to.
Like, he was saying about the fact he would send them into different states to do
right, right.
Only if a state governor requests a federal military intervention.
Mm-hmm.
Now people say, well, the military moved into Little Rock, Arkansas in '57,
mm-hmm.
Or Ole Miss in the campus of '62 under Dwight Eisenhower and John F. Kennedy.
Right.
Yes, they did, but they did it to enforce federal court orders.
Okay.
In the case of the integration of Central High School, mm-hmm. 57. In the case of the integration of University of Mississippi in 62 under John F. Kennedy.
Oh,
and in fact, to prevent a confrontation between federal and state authorities in both those cases, Eisenhower in 57, Kennedy in 62, they federalized the entire Arkansas Guard or Mississippi National Guard,
mm-hmm.
because the Constitution does permit the president to call into federal for federal use all or part of a state guard.
Okay.
It was to prevent, for instance, the Arkansas Guard from confronting federal troops who were sent down to bring about a federal court order.
Right.
It's a little different than simply a president on their own sending federal troops into a area. Now, the only area where he, in fact, could do that without having a request is in Washington, D.C., because it's a federal district. It's not a state. Not part of a state. It's a federal district.
Right.
So, and then there, the mayor of D.C. Made it very clear, and of course, her big painting of Black Lives Matter on the street leading up to the White House.
Sorry.
Okay.
Like I said, it's Monday. Anything can happen. Go ahead, Tim.
Okay. So, that's the difference. Now, could a state governor request federal military assistance if a situation was such that it was getting out of hand? They
right.
could, but no state governor was going to do that. And
right.
they were able
he
to
just
have
can't.
A, they state normally the state National Guards are under the control of the state governor, and unless someone, of course, during Iraq and Afghanistan, National Guard units have been called into federal service, and they can do that. President can do that, or the Secretary of Defense can do that. So, but again, a president can just simply not send federal troops into a city or a state
right.
without the governor of the state requesting that assistance.
Well, thank God for that, because who knows what
oh,
would
well,
happen.
I think Mr. Trump has been maybe hobnobbing too much with some of his authoritarian friends like Mr. Putin
and
Kim
Jong-un
of North Korea. And that's not how this system works.
No, not in America.
No.
Not in America.
No.
Because, you know, he kept saying, well, there will not be a martial law. But, you know, when you play with those type of ideas, then you're looking at martial law.
Yeah.
Now, we got enough policemen in the street now with the protest going on, you know. And can people have a protest without?
Oh yeah, I mean you can have, as I say, you're entitled to peaceful protest. Obviously, violence is something else, but peaceful protest is guaranteed under the First Amendment.
Okay.
First Amendment of the Constitution says people have the right to redress grievances to the government.
Okay.
And obviously, in a peaceful manner.
Right.
Now, there's violence. Then you have to have authority to try to end that.
Break it up, yeah.
But other than that, yeah, that's what happened with this thing where they cleared out these peaceful protesters so that Mr. Trump could do this little photo op at the church, and then the church itself, when the people who were in charge of it afterwards were incensed that he did this kind of thing.
That was not funny. He was having people shot with the rubber bullets and tear gassed. And, you know, I mean, wow.
Yeah. And as I say, the Joint Chief Staff, the Chair of the Joint Chief Staff, just in the last few days,
admitted that they were asked to move and they wouldn't.
Yeah. Well, and as I say, apologize for being part of that effort because, again, they have to be concerned on their reputation as military officers. These are career military officers, you know, West Point graduates, whatever. Mm-hmm. And they're concerned about how history's going to look at this down the road. And so that's why they said that this is not what we would do. You do not use the military to try to suppress peaceful protest from American citizens. And
Wow, that's something. So I know you look at a lot of statistics. How did our president fare as far as handling the COVID emergency?
His ratings from the public have been very poorly. Did not feel that he handled this. Well, you have to understand, back in February, early March, whatever, he said, this is nothing to it, it'll fade away and whatever. And then suddenly we had this spike, you had the thing in New York, and people, and then they had to go into all the orders and so on. I will say this, I'm a good Democrat, but I think Governor DeWine has done a good job on this whole process. Yes. This is Dr. Amy Acton, who was the state health director. Mm-hmm. She actually, she was interviewed by him before he became governor, and the position had never been held apparently by a medical doctor. She was on the faculty at the Iowa State University School of Medicine, mm-hmm. and she interviewed for it and whatever, or she interviewed whatever, and she just laid out what her thoughts were. She thought she would get the job, and about 2 days later, he called and said she wanted. She's not even a Republican, but he didn't care. I mean, she thought she was best qualified.
Right. So then she knew what she was doing. Yeah.
And here, of course, she actually has gotten this reputation because of this.
Yes.
And here, it was a few days ago, she resigned the position. I think she was under a lot of pressure.
Oh, yeah.
From some critics. There were some people outside of her home. Mm-hmm. They had to provide her state security. And now she's no longer going to be the state health director, but she is going to be the governor's advisor on health issues.
That's good.
And in fact, just this last Saturday, CNN and Sesame Street or PBS teamed up, and they invited her on because she'd gotten this reputation. So
I saw her on there.
Yeah.
And the other doctor that be on CNN.
Dr. Sanjay Gupta, who's a neurosurgeon on CNN.
I saw
actually here a couple years ago when we were down in Atlanta and went through the CNN building, and we actually saw him taping a program another studio. So yes, he lives in Atlanta. So
okay.
And of course, like I say, these areas that had the damage and clean up that whole thing has been challenging. So as I say, as we get close to the election, there will be these issues that are sure going to be discussed and debated, and again, we don't know where this is all going to go. It appears that these demonstrations are going to continue, the protesting, so forth. And as I said, this could be the biggest thing that we've had maybe since the Vietnam protest. We'll have to wait and see how, as this goes through the summer into the fall. So,
what issues you think will be on our ballots here in Ohio?
Well, of course, we're going to have the presidential race. We have, and in Ohio, we also have two Supreme Court races this year, two state Supreme Court races. Well, the races for members of the House, U.S. House, and members of the General Assembly of Ohio, and then, of course, our county officials and so on. One race that a little maybe pointier, we have now two commissioners' positions to fill, Lynn Thomas and I think it was another name, who was running for the other commissioner seat. And then Commissioner Andy Appelfeller.
Tara Dyer.
Andy Appelfeller had already filed for election. and she had to file as a write-in because nobody filed. Well, she did get the necessary votes, and her name will be on the November general election ballot.
Right?
Yeah, she did.
Yeah, she got
she'll be on the general election
signatures.
Ballot. Kerr Murray is running again with Lynn Thompson, the other position.
Also, we have three.
Well, two positions.
Two positions.
Four candidates ran for the two positions.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, Kerr Murray is the incumbent, and he's being challenged by Lynn Thomas, who was a former county commissioner. He's now a Marion Township trustee. And then Tara's challenging Andy Appelfeller in the other position. So,
you think marijuana's going to make it back on the ballot?
I doubt. The deadline is early July. There were several different issues out there for signature. And because of the COVID, getting people out, I doubt any of these issues are going to get on the ballot. Because the General Assembly did not put them on the ballot.
Okay.
And they had to be on there by signatures by petition. I would doubt very much of any of those issues get the necessary signatures on because of that. So we'll see, but I would be surprised if any of them make it to the ballot because there was a huge number of signatures they needed. And normally one of the big ways they get signatures is stand outside the polling places.
Right.
Like at the primary. Well, of course, we didn't have any.
Sure did.
In-person voting was all done by mail, so
that
eliminated that issue.
Sure
and then trying to go door-to-door. I mean, people just, were in their homes, and they were not going to. So, we'll have to wait and see what happens, but I doubt if those are going to make it. And, of course, obviously, the presidential race is the major race in the all along.
Here we go again, presidential election, Donald Trump or Joe Biden.
Yes, Mr. Biden, having secured this is his third bid, and he's got, When Bernie Sanders basically conceded at the end of, I think it was the end of February and March, whenever it was, and Mr. Biden then will be the nominee, and he actually has now secured enough delegates. And however they're going to do this to officially confirm it, then, as I say, he will be selected as running mate here the next few weeks for vice president. Several names are out there. I did a different read on it. He's
the
looking
mayor
at
of, Georgia, isn't she one of them?
Well, the mayor of Atlanta. Keisha Lance Bottoms, I believe her name is, is one name suggested. Senator Kamala Harris of California, and Congresswoman Val Demings from Orlando, Florida, and I believe her husband's actually she's just a first-term congressman. I think her husband's actually the sheriff of Orange County, Florida, which is where Orlando is. I believe that's the case.
Okay.
And then the other name that has been out there for some time, could be a possibility, is Stacey Abrams, who was the candidate for governor of Georgia 2 years ago. Many feel that, frankly, that election was almost stolen from her because of some voter suppression efforts.
Right.
And her name has been mentioned.
What about
Elizabeth Warren? Her name certainly has been out there. There are those things that if Mr. Biden would name an African-American woman, it would be a major help to his campaign.
So the remarks or him being, it was suggested, not maybe even stronger than a suggestion that he was having hanky-panky with some lady.
That whole thing that fell apart.
It did?
Yeah, that whole thing. It was a... an effort by some people to get, and it just didn't, it went nowhere. So, I think he addressed the issue at the time, and that was it. So, there'll be some other things. There's going to be some efforts probably at trying to bring about some other investigations. I'm sorry, that kind of thing is
it's so easy for women to do that.
Other issues, maybe like his son Hunter Biden and some other issues, and I think the Republicans are barking up the wrong tree. I think that's going to work on it because American people are pretty smart about things.
Right.
And frankly, Mr. Trump and some of his issues he's been trying to bring about. Abe Lincoln was, he tried to compare himself to somebody, Abe Lincoln. Lincoln was a very, of course, he's considered to be the best president we've had in U.S. history.
Right.
And, but also he had these little witty sayings that he came up with during his lifetime. And many of the things that he said then in his lifetime are relevant to today.
True.
And I think the one that maybe Mr. Trump needs to remember was Lincoln famously said, "You can fool some people all the time and all the people some of the time, but you can't fool all the people all the time.
All the time, that's for sure.
And I think he's been trying to do that. And I think that some of it's catching up with him now.
I tell you, some of the things he says, I don't even understand. I don't think.
Well, and the other thing, again, some of the things that he's trying to come up with. And I forget exactly what it was here a few weeks ago. He was trying to say something. And I get another Lincoln little witism, was that it's best to remain seated and let people think you don't know anything about the subject rather than stand up, start talking, and remove all doubt. And so yeah, I mean, as I say, things that he said in his lifetime are relevant to today as they were back then. So
I tell you. Yeah. Especially where he's concerned. But he's more businessman.
And then here's the thing. Some people wonder, business, I mean, you know, there's been real concern because, like I say, this whole thing with the in fact, the FDA just today withdrew the emergency thing about this
hydrochloroquine.
And then that issue that came up about taking bleach or drinking bleach, whatever. I mean, Johnson & Johnson and Procter & Gamble, they within a matter of a day or two issued statements. I'm sure their attorneys told them, you need to say something publicly about this.
Because
if you stay silent, people are like, well, hey, they're not saying anything about it. So they publicly said, don't do that.
Right.
Don't use our products in that fashion.
Right.
And then, of course, in this other thing the other day when, you know, about the bunker thing. And he was in the bunker whenever somebody's, you know, people just, I mean, kind of, it seemed like he was, yeah.
It was for his protection, but he claimed.
Well, yeah.
He was just looking, checking it out, I guess, right?
Yeah, well, it was like, it just seemed kind of over the top.
Oh, yeah, and, absolutely. He's that type of guy, you know.
So, but as I said, we'll see all this. Now, something else the other day, I just heard this, and I have thought maybe for several weeks now, you know, normally we have these presidential debates in the fall.
Mm-hmm.
And there has been what they call the Commission on Presidential Debates. They've been around since the late 80s. I think they started around the 88 campaign and onward.
Okay.
And the format has been three presidential debates and one vice presidential debate.
Okay.
And the usual three presidential debates, the formats they've been following, is they have one where they have a panel of three or four journalists asking questions of the two candidates. What they call a town hall kind of thing, where there are a group of people who've been selected to come in and ask questions.
Right.
And then the third one is usually the two candidates together and then one commentator asking questions and so forth.
Right.
And then there's a vice presidential debate. Well, here the other day, and I have thought maybe for several weeks, I don't really think Mr. Trump wants to debate because I think he wouldn't do too well in that. And the other day, I think maybe you kind of let the former Republican chairman, Rance Priebus, may have let the cat out of the bag when he says that Trump wants six debates. Well, because he thinks that Trump would do better on these debates. What's going to happen is, I can tell you, I'm just about predicting what's going to happen. About July or August, the Commission on Presidential Debates, and there's usually a co-chair of this, one Republican, one a Democrat, will present their format. There's three debates and vice presidential debate. They will indicate the sites of the debates where they're going to be held usually. They're held at college campuses.
Right.
And the cities where they're going to be held. And then put it out there. Then the two sides get together first, write out some details. I think I can now predict what's going to happen.
Right.
Trump's people are going to come in and say, we won six debates. And Biden people are going to say, hey, we got the format from the commission debates, the three and so forth. That's what we're going to do with.
Right.
And they're going to say, well, Biden's afraid to debate and so forth. And they're not going to come to an agreement. And then there'll be no debates. And I would not be surprised if that ends up being how they're going to get out of it. Mm-hmm. By the saying they really want more, when in fact they really don't want any.
So
the result is there'll be no agreement and no debates. Now, it could be wrong, certainly, but we'll see what happens over these next few months.
And if that happens, no debates, we'll just be voting on the merit of each man.
Yeah. So, but...
And that's a possibility.
Oh, yeah. I mean, of course, 60 years ago, the Kennedy-Nixon debates in back in 1960. Mm-hmm. We had those four debates at that time. And many feel that's what helped John F. Kennedy win the election.
Okay.
Then there were no debates in for 64, 68, or 72. Hmm. Then in 76, Jimmy Carter and Gerald Ford, and I'm not sure they had maybe one or two. I know they had one, and it may have been more than that. And that's when they also had the first vice presidential debate. But at the time, the debates were not organized by this commission on debates. It was, I think, the League of Women Voters that was doing it.
Okay.
And that was about the mid-80s, and then I believe it was in 88, by 88 is when this commission debates was organized. Okay. And they've been doing it ever since then, so forth. And so we'll see what happens.
When was President Reagan elected president?
1980, 40 years ago. He defeated Jimmy Carter for a second term. And then he got reelected in 84 with Walter Mondale.
Okay, so mid-70s. Carter or Ford?
Carter beat Jimmy. Of course, Gerald Ford became president when Richard Nixon resigned because of the Watergate scandal in 74. Gerald Ford, who had been, he actually Ford, because there was one election for president or vice president, because before Nixon resigned, Spiro Agnew, the vice president, resigned in October 73 because of some activity that when he was governor of Maryland, and it came out. So then under the 25th Amendment, Nixon had to nominate somebody to be vice president. That's when he named Gerald Ford, who was then a congressman from Michigan, became vice president. Well, then, of course, the following August of 74, Nixon resigned because of the Watergate scandal. So Nixon, then Ford became president.
Right.
And he served out the rest of Ford, or Nixon's term, and then he lost to Jimmy Carter in the 76th election. And then, of course, Carter served the term, then got defeated for a second term by Ronald Reagan in 1980.
Yeah. 40 years ago.
40 years ago, yeah.
It doesn't seem possible.
It's a lot of times, I mean, 40 years ago, I was just elected to the city council 40 years ago. And it's hard to believe that a lot of time has come and gone.
Yeah, I mean, whoa. Yeah. A lot of time has gone by quickly.
Yes.
It's like 2020, right?
Yeah.
It's gone by so fast, and so much has happened in such a small amount of time.
Yep. So
wow. So you don't even think, we got about 1 minute, the fact that President Trump gave out the $1,200 to help individuals.
Well, it was not his. That little letter, whatever. The Congress was the one that approved that. And, of course, there's, I mean, here's the thing. We've got, we're in an economic recession. We've
not doing so well right now,
13%. Right? Actually, some feel that number may be a bit low. Frankly, because we've had so much unemployment so quickly, the Labor Department admitted that they've had a hard time, Bureau of Labor Statistics, I should say, had a hard time pulling together all the info they need.
Right.
So we'll see what happens when the July numbers come out.
Right.
And some people actually, the numbers may actually be higher than was anticipated.
I'm sure.
Last time.
I'm sure. A lot happened so quickly. Quick judgments had to be taken, had to be done. And
so,
we
it was unprecedented what was happening.
Yes,
there in
it
March.
Was.
So.
And no one knew exactly what to do, but something was done.
Yeah.
Thank you, Tim, for being my
guest
today. I really enjoy you every time you are here with us. You just bring us up to date with your knowledge of politics and history, and we thank you so much for that.
Yeah, good to see you.
Good to see you, too. You've been listening to A Voice of a People. My name is Linda Sims, and hopefully you tune in again tomorrow. We will have the health department here talking about COVID-19 and where we are today and what our aspirations for our future. Now, you are listening to WWGH 107.1 FM radio. And don't forget, we stream live, www.wwgh107.1fmradio. And you can download free app called TuneIn on any electronic device and search WWGH. Until next time, be blessed. Thank you.
You're listening to WWGH Radio 107.1 FM, Marion, Ohio, the talking place. For legendary comedian and the voice of Ursula in The Little Mermaid, Pat Carroll.
And as I teased before we went to the break there, we have on today a lady who I've had on the program, I believe, two times before. But every time she comes on, I am excited. She's one of the most kind. Kind is the word I think of when I think of this woman. People that I have ever talked to, and I can tell you, I won't name names, but there are people who have been in Hollywood and had a great career who are not as kind as you might think they are. This woman exceeds the kindness that you might think she would be. She has the greatest laugh in the world, and she was the voice of one of the greatest villains in Disney history, Ursula from The Little Mermaid. And along the way, she did a lot of great game shows and television series and worked with people like Jimmy Durante, Gloria Swanson, Danny Thomas, Sid Caesar. The list goes on and on. She is amazing, the amazing Pat Carroll. Pat, how are you?
I'm wonderful, Scott. Now I'm going to have to be a because you said so much about me nice. But I'll tell you, Scott, it's one of the easiest things in the world. And I wish with all the things they have going on about doing this and doing that, if we were all just more kind to each other. Think of yourself in relationship to other people. And they go through the same things you do. And just be kind. It's so easy, it's so simple, and I've seen rooms change because somebody was kind. And that's a great impact.
Pat, as we end this interview, and I always hate to say goodbye, but you say you love to sing, I love your voice. Can you give us a little line of something as we part ways here?
Of what, a song?
Any song you like.
Did you ever go into an Irishman shanty where whiskey is whisk? And the blues.